Welcome back to Tech Days Online 2017. We're having a change of pace now. We're going to move away from the technology and how the technology works to how the most important part of your technical solution works, the people. With me is Jessica Rose. She's founder of the Transcode project.
Co-founder, yes.
Yes.
Always looking to give away the credit.
And head of developer relations at Crate DB.
Yeah. It's an open source SQL database, really focused on machine data.
Okay,
it's pretty cool.
Today is all about open platform, open source, and I think today's really more about open conversation, and you're going to talk to us about developer-driven development, communication-driven development. So what is that then, Jessica?
So it's really, I do quite a bit of public speaking, and someone came up to me afterwards, after I'd given a couple different talks at the same event, and said, hey, all of your talks are really just you yelling at people to communicate better. And that felt very true. My background is in linguistics, and I found that all of the issues I've ever had on large software projects, on big challenges, have been about people not really fully understanding what they wanted or fully communicating it.
Okay.
So I really wanted to look at open communication and see if we could talk through that a little bit.
So you're going to solve all of my miscommunication issues and help me work better with my team and tell them what I need, yeah?
Do you know how to get in touch with me afterwards? Because if you don't, yeah, totally.
Fine, give me a cut.
I'll oversell. So there's the slide with where you can find me. But I'm going to be talking to you all about communication-driven development today. And to give you a bit of background about myself, before I moved into technology, I was actually a linguist.
Okay.
So this is why I'm really, really interested in communication. So a lot of the issues I saw and studied linguistically are the same kinds of challenges I see in technology, maybe amplified by the fact that we'd often prefer to just use Slack than go and hash things out in person.
Yeah, my guys are like that as well. They'd far rather IM me, despite the fact they sit 3 feet from me.
As much as I'm going to tell people, no, communicate in person, really get in depth, I will absolutely do that anytime I can. Anytime I can skip a daily call and do it as a chat message, oh yeah.
Oh, you'd hate working with me then, because I come and stand behind you and go, hi, how you doing?
Wow.
That's a bad thing from that side, isn't it?
It's good for communication, it's good. But I'll get you started, and hypothetically, you're my boss, right?
Okay.
Yeah.
Fine. Ooh, I can see my prompt. So, Jess, I need you to build something. I want something cool. I want something great. It's got to be disruptive. It's got to be innovative. I want you to leverage every synergistic paradigm in the book so we can really delight our customers and get absolutely on the forefront of this bleeding edge of the wave.
Okay. So you're just going to want me to put one or two little things in there. Short, easy features, really? Yeah,
just a few things. I mean, our customers have got to be able to look for anything they feel like. We'll sort of work with some kind of, I don't know, telepathic interface, think about their dreams, allow them to buy it, deliver it before they've thought about it, all that kind of stuff.
Yeah, just tiny, tiny things. Okay, well, I'm just going to go away and I'm going to build the thing.
Don't take too long about it.
No, not too long because we've got a deadline. So I'm going to do all of my work in completely reasonable paces, and I'm not going to do it all right before the deadline. No. But hey, I've built the thing. It's fine. We're done. Here's the thing.
Okay. That's not quite what I had in mind. I mean, it is a thing, certainly. It's not quite the paradigm I was thinking of. It doesn't quite look like the sort of telepathic interface that we talked about.
But you just want me to like change a couple little tiny things. And because I mostly got you. It's just like a little thing.
Just a couple of things. I mean, if we start at the beginning and work our way through the end and change everything that's in the middle, we're probably good.
Oh, that's just fine. That's great. I'll go fix the thing. And while gently hyperbolic, this is something that I've seen happen again and again, both long 6-month projects and like short little sprints. And it's one of those things where you get the idea that someone has to be at fault here.
Well, obviously, clearly, someone is.
Who would you would think I was at fault as the employee, not yourself as the manager or stakeholder?
I don't know. I'd like to hear your thoughts on that subject.
I think that in communication, the idea of fault gets really, really difficult. So communication is mutually opt-in. So both people have to be doing everything right to get sort of 80% there. You're never able to, even for feature's sake, get fully telepathic.
Okay, but to be fair, it's okay because we're a modern company. We're using modern practices. So we're using Agile, and that sort of iterative approach, that's going to fix that, right?
Yeah, because, you know, if you've got Agile and you've got Agile practices, you don't need communication at all. Having Agile principles in place are a great way to build up better communication structures and better communication practices, but they're never going to replace good communication. Okay. Best case scenario, if you're using an Agile approach, it just means that those frustrating confrontations around who misunderstood whom are going to happen every 4 weeks instead of every 6 months. So you'll be having smaller fights more often.
Okay.
Which, depending on how much you like conflict, might be a good way to go. So far, I'm kind of really asking you to take my word for it. Hey, communication's important. This is going to eat up a lot of your time in development processes. And that's not very scientific, the whole, hey, trust me. So instead of trusting me, I had an equally unscientific Twitter poll where I got about a little over 1,000 technologists to tell me about how often they have to rebuild product or features because of poor communication processes. And I think this is fantastic because we only have 2% of people who said that they never, ever have to rework things. And I think this is a very, very clear indication that 2% of people lie. Or they work for themselves and don't have any users.
Oh, I like that. If you could get rid of users, that'd be fantastic.
Well, I gave this as a conference talk once, and I said, no matter what you're doing, you absolutely need better communication. And during the question and answer, someone was like, I work by myself. I was like, okay, but what about your users? He's like, I don't really have a lot of users. Just like, why? So unless you're that one particular person who works by themselves and has no users, in which case, you should probably communicate with someone to find out how to do that.
Maybe get out more and find a friend.
You're probably going to need to communicate a bit better.
Okay.
And I think every problem about communication is really a problem of perspective. And I imagine most folks viewing this either at home or at work, I don't know what time it is everywhere, have probably seen this before and probably gotten this emailed to them several times. So everybody has a very different perspective. And when you're communicating to different people with different perspectives, you're not always really able to fully grasp where your limits begin and theirs end.
Okay.
So the customer saying, oh, I want this thing, and it's a swing, you know, a swing, and we're going to have lots of people can use it. It could be sort of indicating that they do want something that's multi-user at the same time. And the project leader's like, oh, yeah, it's fine. I've never seen a swing before, so this is how they work. And going through communication issues, it is very often about people taking their perspectives and trying to wrap language around that in a way that works.
Okay, so basically I need to be careful that just because you're telling me you understand what I mean, if we haven't agreed some kind of common terms, then how do I know?
So common terms is the really interesting part. I think in software engineering and in software, we often think of ourselves as really logical, very, very critical, very hard-hitting. But we lack a lot of scientific terms and engineering terms for what we're building, what we're doing. And I think that's so interesting.
Okay. Right.
In woodworking, and I think you might have mentioned earlier in engineering.
Yes, yeah, so, I mean, a friend of mine's a mechanical engineer. He always used to say, jokingly, measure with a micrometer, cut with an axe. But at least there's a measurement in there.
You know,
my favorite joke is the pint of beer in the middle of a room, right? Mathematician, physicist, engineer, and they're allowed to take a step forward, but each step can be half as long as the previous step, and the beer's in the center for all of them. The mathematician just walks out of the room. Physicist takes a couple of steps, walks out the room. The engineer says, ah, it's close enough, and drinks all three pints.
Oh, dear, I'm now on the engineer's side. But I think that can be really challenging for an industry where we are very logically driven and very results driven, not to be able to follow sort of the handiwork and woodwork rules. We're not able to measure twice all the time because we often don't even have the vocabulary we need to be accurately measuring against each other.
Okay.
I think that can be really challenging.
So is there a way that we can look to solve that?
I think that working on your communication patterns as often as possible. This talk's about communication, so I'm a bit biased. But I believe this so firmly. I believe that communication is the most important part of your development process. I believe this with such force that if you disagree with me, I will absolutely fight you, but, you know, politely on the internet. not like cage match.
Okay.
And it's difficult because in a perfect world, when you're looking to communicate clearly, what you're doing is you have your perspective, you have your vision, you have your goals, and you're really having to spell that out as a narrative to someone else.
Okay.
And through the practice of bringing someone else on that journey and describing what you want and what you need, I think that by describing that and by communicating it, you often find yourself more clearly defining it for yourself.
Okay, makes sense.
Have you ever been asking someone to do something, and as you describe it, you're like, hey, I need you to build this. It's important that it does that. Oh my God, that doesn't work.
Yeah, and no, I haven't thought of that, but you were just going to, yes. No,
you're like,
absolutely.
Don't worry, I'm just going to. So I think most engineers are familiar with the rubber duck process.
Okay, I'm not familiar with the rubber duck process. Go on then.
So a lot of managers will have developers come up to them and describe problems and talk them through problems, which is incredibly valuable and useful. But oftentimes as a manager, you'll see your engineers come up to you and start describing the problem. Say, hey, I keep doing this and I keep hitting this error, but I know this architecture. Oh my God, no, I got it. Thank you. So you don't need any input, but just through the practice of describing it, you more clearly understand your own problem.
Okay.
So some managers, myself included, will insist that you talk something out with either yourself or an actual rubber duck before coming indoors.
I like that. Yeah. Oh, I do remember that one.
Old office, I had a bear. It was quite good.
Cool.
And as part of that, I asked another very unscientific Twitter poll. And got about 7,000 people this time. I think the sparkle hearts really, really work. And was asking people how much of their workday they spent purely coding. And define this as just head down, not talking to other people, just da-da-da-da-da-da, like blue screen and hackers. Green screen and hackers. Hackers.
There's an age thing in there, which paradigm you're using,
definitely. Oh, I'm terribly old. And yeah, most people said that they spent 25% or more, at least half of their time in non-head-down coding. Mm-hmm. And in the responses to this, it was fantastic. You had lots of people saying, I have meetings, whether or not they found those meetings valuable. Or I talk to my shareholders. I work with my team. So a lot of the non-head-down coding projects were about learning about what we were doing, learning about what we were feeling out.
Okay.
So far, I've been hopefully nicely fussing at you that communication's important.
Okay, so why is it so hard then?
I think communication gets really challenging because the animals humans are built for. Oh, this is sort of a ecclesiastical question quite quickly.
Uh-oh.
So we're humans as animals, we're built for really, really simple environments.
Okay.
We're able to quickly and efficiently register and communicate danger, safety, warmth. Complex environments get challenging. And one of the fun things about software engineering is this is an incredibly complex environment. I might say needlessly complex sometime. If you're working on an enterprise project, for example, you're probably not going to have technical skills that cover the entirety of the project. Mm-hmm. And you're probably going to need to work very closely with people who do have technical skills that cover understanding of all aspects. And this isn't communicating danger, food, hot, cold, friend. This is communicating really, really nuanced issues,
right,
which can intersect with ego quite a bit.
Okay, right. So strength of personality maybe can be a problem, how I present myself. If you're a bit quieter than me, then even though I'm wrong, you don't come back at me, that kind of thing.
Well, okay. I think as well, sometimes it's important to recognize that you don't want to completely trust the people you're communicating with all the time.
Okay.
Which seems weird. So far I've been saying, hey, communicate with everybody. Be as open as you can. Share as much as you can. But recognizing that we don't always want to share everything because of self-interest, and because of self-interest that can drive a project, is really important.
Okay.
And there's a communication issue called the Scotty deceptive.
Right. So that way we multiply all of our estimates by a factor of 5 so we look like a miracle worker.
Yeah. It's entirely that. So for anybody who hasn't seen Star Trek, Kirk, the space boss man, I think is... There's a bunch of very angry Star Trek people getting on the internet right now to be like, it's not the boss man. Would come to Scotty with a problem and say, hey, Scotty, I need you to fix this. How long will it take? And Scotty's never done this weird project before. It's always something very, very elaborate. I need you to fix the engines using a cooking pan and these rocks.
Okay, that sounds quite cool.
It's
not far off,
enough.
To be fair. Yeah.
And having never done it, a bit like a software engineer being given a new project, Scotty's asked to ballpark how long this will take. And it's, no matter what he says, Kirk always comes back and says, you have half that amount of time. And this is setting up a dynamic where it's in Scotty's best interest to overestimate no matter what. But at the same time, Kirk naturally distrusts Scotty's estimates. Mm-hmm. So you have an environment where mutual distrust is weirdly the right thing to do, but is going to continue to make things increasingly challenging.
Right.
Yeah, so okay. I think recognizing where your self-interests intersect with your team's interests and being as honest as, well, honest to yourself, not necessarily to Kirk.
Okay.
Yeah. So far, communication's important, and it's hard because we're complex animals now. We're living in complex environments, and we can't always trust each other in these environments. And so far, this has been a lot of me telling you that everything's terrible.
Well, it's okay. So long as we know it's terrible, then we have to make it better. So how do we make it better? What have I got to do to be able to communicate better with my
Fantastic.
Team?
Fantastic. I'll give you a couple of very, very practical things you can do day to day. But I always like to have chats like this as part of a larger conversation. So if anybody here is watching and you have fantastic communication structures for technical communication, you've got this thing you do on your team and it's wonderful. The hashtag is...
It's UK Tech Days. Feel free to tweet us. And you're Jess Lynn Rose on Twitter, I believe.
I think that was at the
start of the slide.
Yeah, and if anybody else wanted to fight me politely on the internet about communication being the most important part of your development process, I'll also fight you politely.
We're English. You know it's all gone wrong when somebody says, I'm terribly disappointed.
I used to be a teacher. That's savage. Like, I'm not mad, I'm just a bit let down. One of the things I'd really like to see people moving into their communications skills toolkit as often as possible is active listening. And oftentimes when you see people practicing active listening, they're sort of going through the motions while waiting for their turn to talk.
Okay. He said consciously he might be doing exactly that.
I can't tell. So active listening involves quite a bit of waiting patiently, giving people additional prompts, asking questions, being really, really interested. Say, oh, wow, when you were saying that we should do more of X, what kinds of experiences led you to that? So ask people as much about their background and how it informs their opinion and gives you quite a bit more insight into their perspective, which can be really valuable.
Okay.
It also makes people hate you less.
I'm good with that. I'd like to be hated less.
So really making a point to be active listening as often as possible. But that doesn't always work for distributed teams. So active listening is really a face-to-face sort of thing.
Yeah, I know. I mean, as a guy who works with customers and other team members that are remote, I know I personally have a problem that if you're out of sight, you're out of mind. You know, I walk around the office and I talk to people, but if you're not in the office, I don't think to go, you know, hi Jess, how are you doing today?
Yeah, and I think that having an in-office and remote split, it can be one of the most challenging setups.
Okay.
And there you've got to do some really unnatural things to support folks who are working remotely. And that's move as many of your conversations as possible into static, text-based, visible places.
Okay.
Yeah, so there's so much tooling available right now that gives you the space to have these conversations online and have these conversations in visible environments.
So we're talking things like Slack, Teams, those kind of more informal chat environments where we've got some history, so if I come in halfway through, I can see what's been said.
You can. I think that whether or not people do scroll back up to see what's been said really depends on team culture.
Okay.
But making it possible for people to go back and see that history can be really useful. And really weirdly and incredibly satisfyingly, one of the things that I think is really, really useful for effective communication is for team members or even whole teams to be able to reject communication processes that don't hold any value.
Okay.
Yeah.
See, that's no good because that means I get as far as the office door and they go, no, we're not listening.
We're done. Get out. So earlier when you were sort of tasking me with building a product, and you said, oh, let's make the synergy really pop and let's delight. None of that means anything, does it? Does it? Oh dear. As soon as someone says synergy with any meaning behind it, I'll take that back. But being able to recognize when these meetings aren't holding communication value or when these reports aren't being looked at and creating risk-free environments. Risk-free is a bit optimistic, but low-risk environments where people can say, I'm not finding value in this practice. How can we do this a different way?
Okay.
Yeah.
So as the manager, you've got to be careful. You've got to accept the criticism constructively and not just give the team the opportunity to say, you know what, your emails at 9 o'clock every morning saying, have you done it yet, really aren't helping. Yeah, okay.
Yeah.
I get you.
And that's difficult.
I can try harder.
Because cutting off annoying but useful communication patterns and processes can feel fantastic. So you're going to need to really audit whether or not there's value coming out of those when people come to you and tell you they're not great.
And I'm guessing that's really hard because that's like a cultural change as well, and trying to get individual people to change their behavior.
So. Well, that and cutting off communication routes is incredibly emotionally satisfying. Okay. As an introvert, as a false extrovert, nothing feels better than canceling plans. and cutting off an annoying but useful communication pattern feels a lot like that. We say, hey, do you know what? I hate Slack. Let's kill Slack. I don't hate Slack.
That's Jess Lynn Rose on the internet if you want to disagree with it.
Oh, no, I'm actually quite fond. Giphy's very useful.
Oh, no, I'm not with you on that one. It's the bane of my existence.
Oh, I'm sorry that you're wrong. and one thing that's just a really interesting practice is to go ahead and ask why several times. Five's a good rough rule. I don't care how many times you ask, so long as when you're given something new and unfamiliar, you continually interrogate why you're doing it. So if you say, build me this thing, I'd be like, okay, why? Who's going to be using this? What kind of feedback have we had from what's out there already? What kind of users are we talking about?
Okay.
So really coming back and asking, do you have any kids?
No, so I was just thinking that, you know, do you not find that suddenly ends with a just because, all right? Because I say so.
Yeah. I was going to say, keep going until someone looks a bit cross and be like, I'm just going to do that now.
Somebody once told me, you keep asking why until you find where the money is.
Oh, that's quite good. Mm. Oh, I'm going to update these slides for
totally steal that one. That's fine.
Yeah, they're like, someone told me. I'll credit you. My favorite sort of longer-term communication pattern is something I'm always a little bit hesitant to recommend because it needs a really, really healthy work culture. And almost everyone, you say, hey, I've got this thing, I've got this this approach for communication on Teams, but you need a really healthy culture.
Yeah, I know we were talking earlier, you showed me that slide, and I sort of looked and thought, well, that sounds a bit dangerous. I mean, it's that sort of healthy debate kind of approach, isn't it? But how do you try and do that without sparking a bigger argument?
So I think that gets really, really challenging. Conflict often sounds like arguments, but recognizing that as humans communicate, almost everything's driven by conflict.
Okay.
And conflict doesn't have to be rah, but just those little points where people engage that make conversations interesting. If I came up here and we were having a chat and we just instantly agreed, no additional input, I said, oh, communication's important. You're like, I absolutely agree that communication's important.
Totally.
And you'd be like, oh, synergy's really good. I'd be like, synergy's so good. This would be surreal and not very emotionally satisfying and not really communicatively valuable. So I find that recognizing that conflict is a part of each and every part of a communication task, and then finding ways to make sure that conflict's useful and valuable and not toxic.
Okay. So how do we do that then?
So for me, I generally work on open source projects. And I found that we've got a lot of different perspectives on these projects. And I think that that's going to be true no matter what your teams do. So for me, we usually have folks on sort of open source true believers, which who are in it for the project and really, oh, what do the contributors want? What do the users want? And then you've got people who really, really care about, you know, what our investors really need us to do this. Our board really needs us to do this. We need to do this for sales. We need to do this for the enterprise product. And recognizing that all of those different viewpoints are actually equally valuable. Mm-hmm. And instead of having meetings where it's a free-for-all scrum and people sort of jumping in to try and say what they can while they can, designating individuals as advocates for different viewpoints can be a fantastic way to do that.
Okay, so try and marshal the debate, yeah, if you like.
So going down a checklist and saying, do you know what, we're looking at reallocating engineering time or resources. Let's hear from our open source advocate. Let's hear from our business interest advocate. Let's hear from sales. So having one person who's ideally speaking for and representing teams and interests, but able to sort of do that almost high school debate club style.
Okay.
Is that a thing in Britain?
Well, we have the Oxford Union. I'm not sure about high school debate. It's a long time since I was at high school. So, I mean, that does sound like there's a bit of skill needed by the moderator, if you like, to try,
yeah,
and draw people in as well.
One of the biggest challenges there is you really need the advocates to have equal expectation that they'll be heard, sort of roughly equal access to power.
Okay.
Yeah, so if I'm advocating for the open source users, I really, really care about that, but the company's extremely sales driven and they're just automatically going for the sales option each time, it's not going to be very, very healthy collaborative conflict. I'm able to voice my opinion, but as I'm not being heard, I'm going to be a lot less likely to voice it. Yeah.
Yeah, okay, yeah, you feel like you're just standing, yeah, shouting in a rain shower and not being heard, and what was the point? So you then disengage from the process entirely.
And I think that's something that a lot of people feel in communication processes. Everybody's had a time where you've cared deeply about something and there's just no way to be heard, no way to access support for your opinion. And having managers and having stakeholders who are really, really aware of the different viewpoints and trying to be as fair as possible is a pretty good way to go.
Okay.
I'm always really hesitant to recommend this because you do need an incredibly healthy culture to do this. But if you ask any manager, say, oh, here's a technique you could use, but you need really healthy culture. It's like, oh, well, we've got really healthy culture, so it's fine.
Yeah, I think, yeah, it's down to the managers that they have to be prepared to accept people saying, I don't agree with you, and not shout at them. And it's that whole sort of positive reinforcement thing.
Yeah.
And, to be fair, honestly, I'm not sure whether I'm any good at that either. I'm sure my guys would quietly say yes or no, but I agree that it's important.
It's challenging too. So there are other sort of more group-based approaches you can do. I have absolutely forgotten the book this is from because my speaker notes are blank. But there is a fantastic book, and I'll tweet the link to it later, which discusses the going through different perspectives as part of your communication process. Say, you know what, all of us as a group, sort of collective group think, are going to think of this sort of Red Hat style. We're just going to go by our gut feelings. What do we care about? Okay, we're going to take some time and switch to a Blue Hat. And it's just about visualizing different perspectives. Say, do you know what, right now we're really going to focus on process. Okay. If we did X, how would that happen? And then going through sort of Black Hat. Here, Black Hat meaning conservative and cautious, which is a bit... bit new for a lot of tech folks.
Yeah.
And all of these communication processes work so well if you're in an environment where you have equal access to power and things are non-toxic and everything's fine.
Right.
Everything being
And if not?
Fine is a big challenge, though.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm really interested in communication because our brains are so interesting. We're these wonderful social animals. And you've heard about first impressions,
mm-hmm,
that you make your first impression within 4 or 5 seconds of meeting someone. And you can't possibly be able to have enough information to make a judgment about that people in that short a time. And actually, that's because your brain's using a lot of shorthands that are kind of garbage. Your brain uses a lot of stereotypes and a lot of biases. You're using information you've sort of already loaded to interact with new and new settings.
Okay. So a friend of mine who does speaker training talks about the lizard brain, that sort of primal part of us. Is that
your
that,
lizard that? Brain autopilots a lot of your communication things.
Okay.
So when you talk about development process, when you talk about a new project, you're really invested in your own success and your team's success. So when you build a thing, we sort of mocked out, like, I built a thing. I'm really dedicated to that thing I built.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's fantastic because to keep my ego running as a human, to keep my lizard brain happy, I need to believe on some level I'm pretty fantastic. Confirmation bias is really taking the things you already believe and using any scrap of external information, external confirmation, to boost that.
Okay. Yeah, yeah. Reinforce that I'm right, yeah. Even if I'm not.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
And this would be fantastic if it was just confirmation bias. But our brains, for being as amazing they are also kind of garbage. There are, I'd say, 200 plus cognitive biases right now, sort of patterns, autopilot patterns for our brain that we've recognized that aren't really helping us and often hurt us. You can't ever fully remove these. You can't debug your brain. But people have found that by learning about and reading about these biases and examining your own behavior for these biases, it can be gently reduced.
Okay.
So yeah, your brain, it's fantastic and terrible. You can't fix it, maybe a little.
You're not going to fix it. You're just going to sand off the rough edges a little bit.
Sit it over in the corner for a bit. Leave it to think about what it's done.
Okay, I'll just sit over here.
Oh. But we've been talking about tools for communication, just sort of gently touching on them quite a bit. Because you said that you really prefer face-to-face communication here.
Yeah, I am very much a... I always think that, you know, we can sit face-to-face and we can have a 30-second conversation and just solve the problem. Whereas we could spend hours bashing an email backwards and forwards. You know, an email is to summarize what we've done. You know, right thing for the right job, rather than just, oh, we've got a tool. Everything's going to be Slack. I'm going to send you messages on Slack.
So that's really interesting, because linguistically, that's very, very true. We prioritize information that we receive in different ways very, very differently.
Okay.
So since we know each other okay now, like, you'd let me borrow your car.
It's outside. If you can get the car keys, you're welcome.
Having a face-to-face interaction, especially with somebody you already have an existing relationship with, people tend to prioritize information that comes in through those modes much more highly than information that comes on through written only, through text only.
So does that suggest that if I don't know you that well, I might be better off asking certain questions by email because you're less likely to sort of react badly rather than if I ask them face-to-face, that kind of thing?
Oh, that gets a bit complicated. I personally, I'm very much of the school that negative things and potential points of conflict are always better face-to-face.
Okay.
You've got a bit more nuance, you've got a bit more sort of human willingness to be soft and fluffy.
Okay, and you've got that opportunity for all the rest of the senses to kick in and see how you're reacting, that kind of thing.
And in sort of polite business environments, very few people are going to scream at you, but that caps lock being cruise control is real easy to get out.
Yeah.
But what kind of tools are you using? So you mentioned you prefer face-to-face environments, but I think that with modern software development, you do have to use a lot of communications tools. You've got a lot of remote working. What kind of tools does your team use?
So we use a whole mix. I mean, we've got Teams, the Microsoft analog to Slack, and people can throw messages on there. I tend to use a lot of email when I'm talking to customers. We do a lot of video conferencing and audio conferencing, and obviously my favorite is face-to-face. You know, we'll do the stand-ups. So I like to just get up from my chair and wander around, and a lot of the other guys that I work with do the same. You know, you're making a coffee, and you just poke your head and go, hi, how are you doing? You know, hopefully I managed to pick almost the right one for the right situation, but I think that's the one thing I think a lot of people struggle with now, isn't it? Which is the right tool of the half dozen we've got, you know?
Yeah, so tool selection gets to be really challenging and often really weird. So you said that you prefer Teams. Teams is sort of the one you've decided works best for you.
Yeah, okay.
And I think that's fantastic. Teams is absolutely great. I don't really care what you use, though.
That's probably fair. Yeah. So long as we talk to each other, it doesn't really matter how.
That's perfect. Yeah, there's no right answer. I think that technologists, especially, but people are over. Do we kind of like to bicker?
I think that's probably fair. I think the other thing that we're really guilty of is, hey, I found this really cool new tool and we've got to use it and it's going to be the only tool and it's the one to win them all and bind them all. And, you know, the new hotness is always the new hotness.
But the new hotness is the new hotness.
Yeah, it's never the right one, though, is it? That's the thing.
And I think that part of that is people get really emotionally attached to the tools they either discover mm-hmm. or the tools that they've been using the longest.
So it's sort of a personal investment thing. Either I've found it, therefore I'm the champion and the evangelist, or, you know, I've done this 40 year man and boy.
Yeah. Or I've been using this for the past 10 years. What do you mean I have to use this new thing?
Yes, yes. Yes. HTML, email, it never catch on, you know, it should just be text only.
I was just about to tell you that it absolutely doesn't matter, but no, I'm gonna unofficially. text only, email, what are people doing? So far as tooling, I very firmly believe, and I've seen this play out again in team after team, that it absolutely does not matter what kind of tooling you're using for communication, as long as your team all have equal access to those tools. And this is where it gets really challenging. As long as they have the equal will to actually use those tools.
Okay. So, I mean, we've got a few minutes till the end of the session. So. I'm really genuinely interested. As a guy who is a manager in a company, which depends on the people that work with me and for me, how can I try and encourage that better communication? Are there a few things that I can do? Are there things I should look for in myself to go, oh, that's a bad habit, don't do it? And have you got any tips to how I can improve
tooling and communication? I always have people look for key phrases.
Okay.
Don't forget to send it via X to this person is a really good one. Because right. Whenever you have, maybe on your teams as well, do you often have everyone is on this communication tool, except for this person who only does email and this person who only answers text messages.
Yep.
And that's recognizing that people prefer to work in different patterns is really, really valuable.
Okay. And should we support that and leave them on their particular choice, or do we have to try and encourage them into the fold?
You can't make them. I don't know. Can you make them? But gently encouraging folks, just because even though they're getting them, even if you're creating workarounds for communication, if everyone's in Teams, but can you give me just a sort of generic name?
A generic name. George, that's a generic name. There you
Everybody's
go.
Using Teams, everybody's chatting in there, everybody's sharing information. But you know, George, he just doesn't get Teams, he never checks it, George is email only. So George is gonna get messaging that's specific to him. People are going to mostly remember to email George when they need him to do something.
Or they might change the message to fit George and he hasn't seen the rest of the conversation.
Yeah. Okay. So George is getting some information, but not be actively communicating with the team and not actively having input into what happens. So for George, it may sound like you're being terrible. Like, George, seriously, come use Teams. No, seriously, George, come use Teams. But really making it clear that this kind of change is to more fully give George a voice can be really valuable. And also making sure that you don't have to rehash things again and again.
Okay.
So I see oftentimes with teams with this dynamic that everybody's using Teams except for George. That when you do get George looped in, there's going to be sort of a rerun of conversations that have already happened.
Okay.
Hey, George, we're building this thing. We need these things done. Thanks. Have a nice day. Smiley face emoji. And George will be like, but what about this customer? Or what about this edge case? What about this? You'd be like, oh, no, we've already talked about that, George.
Yeah, and you've got to replay the conversation back. Yeah, okay.
So really having sort of a gentle come to Jesus talk and steering George at getting things sort of in gear would probably be best for everyone on the team.
Okay, so gentle encouragement, show them the benefit of the new tool, maybe sit down with them and show them the stuff that they've been missing, that kind of thing.
Be careful, I think that can sometimes feel a little bit patronizing as well.
Okay, that's fine.
You're George's manager, do what works. Do you actually manage someone named George?
I don't manage anybody named
that's
George,
good.
But I do have somebody in the company who's... one of the cool things about the place that I work is we're all different. And one of our great guys is very much a technology Luddite. And actually, that's fantastic.
Cool.
Because he's always the guy sat there going, yeah, okay, what's the non-technological answer to this one? But it does mean as we pick up these wonderful new things like Slack or Teams or whatever, he's just like, you know, what now?
Yeah. You'd be like, it's a chat box there. Yeah.
Yeah, phones are made to talk on. They're not, you know, email, Twitter, what's that?
Yeah. Oh, does Teams have Giphy?
Yes, sadly, Teams has Giphy.
Have you thought of introducing them via Giphy? Luddites love sparkle GIFs.
That kind of involves me being exposed to Giphy. Maybe we found one of my flaws that I don't like Giphy. Let's rewind then all the way back to the start of the conversation. We talked about tools, and I can welcome George into the fold. What about, are there any tips and tricks you've got to solve that initial problem that we talked about where we're having the same conversation and actually we're not? We're talking two completely different languages and paradigms, and I say I want a swing and you think I want, I don't know, something completely different. Is there anything that I can use to spot that going wrong?
So looking for mirrored answers, and this is a technique a lot of teachers use. So when you were in school, did your teacher ever, was explaining a thing and then asks, do you understand? And you say, yes.
Yeah.
You don't always understand, but you're going to say yes, because that stops the conversation and you're done.
Okay, yes, it makes it go away. Yes, yeah. Right, yeah, like, I'll give you that. Yeah, okay.
Yeah, and I've been through, my friends have sat through roadmap meetings where towards the end, like, did you get that? Yep.
So how do you tell the difference between yes, I understood it, and yes, I'm saying yes, because then you might go away?
Don't ask for a yes. Okay. So ask for meaningful input, both because it's going to be valuable to the process and because it checks for people, A, listening and understanding you, and it also checks for whether or not you've described what you think you've described.
Okay, so give me an example then, because initial thought would be to say, well, you know, has anybody got anything they want to raise? Is there anything that was unclear? But that still, to be fair, gives you a yes or no answer, so that sounds wrong.
So making these things really open-ended, say, do you know what, I had been thinking about, like, we definitely need to do something in this space. We definitely need to build a mobile application for this customer base that does these things. And then give people a lot of flexibility around there. Like, you're paying people because they're creative and interesting. Mm-hmm. So say, like, we need this functionality. What kinds of ways do you think would be best to do that? How would we prioritize that? What do you think is the most important? So by giving people quite a bit more agency in the conversation, you ask them to invest more and reflect their understanding quite a bit better.
Okay, so try and draw comments out during the meeting. So how do I end the meeting then? Because I'm not sure whether I do that, to be fair, at the start of the meeting. Now you're making me second guess myself.
Oh, no.
But at the end, I do always tend to wrap it with, okay, has anybody got anything they want to raise? Is everybody clear? Is that still okay?
I think that's okay, but I'd also give folks, because not everybody's as sort of outgoing face-to-face, give people a second route to feedback. Say, hey, it was fantastic. Does anybody else have anything they'd like to say now? Also, I'm going to be sending these notes out as an email or a Teams message. If you've got something you'd like to add to that, message me. I'll go ahead and add those to the notes.
All right. So maybe, I know we were talking in the other room with somebody else where he was saying, throwing another deadline. If we say, well, look, I've got to deal with this by Thursday. If you've got any thoughts, ping me an email before then. Otherwise, we need to move on. Is that okay?
That's really fantastic.
Okay.
Also, if you do have folks on your team who are a little bit quieter, but you know have great ideas, either chatting to them one-on-one or even emailing or messaging them across the medium they like best can be a great way to get more information.
Okay, try and draw them out.
Yeah.
All right.
If you've got like wonderful, fluffy introverts who don't really want to hang out with you but do want to be heard, make sure you're giving them an opportunity across the mediums they're happy with.
All developers are wonderful and fluffy, aren't they? It's just a developer thing.
Almost all.
Okay, well, we're nearly out of time. Thank you. That was a really interesting session.
No, thank you so much for your time.
Thank
you all for listening.
A lot about habits. So, Jessica Rose, thank you very much for joining us. Nice change of pace from the technical sessions. Jesslyn Rose on Twitter, if you want to politely, remember now, disagree with her. Don't go away. In 15 minutes, we are back with Gordon McKenna, and we're going to look at monitoring your systems running in the cloud using Op Insights, Operations Management Suite, be they Windows or Linux or, frankly, whatever you want. Thank you very much.